Today is Tuesday, November 19th, 2019. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with John Weisheit. John's last name is spelled W-E-I-S-H-E-I-T. My name is Tom Martin. This oral history is being conducted over the telephone. Good evening, John. How are you?
Tom, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your willingness to participate in this oral history work that we're doing. May we have your permission to record this interview over the phone?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I'd like to go back in the Wayback Machine here. John, do you remember family stories about how your mom met your dad?
It was a blind date.
Nice. Where? Where were they?
Well, let's see. My mom lived in Lawndale, like near Redondo Beach. And my dad lived in Southgate. And I think it was a girlfriend of my mother's who encouraged her to do a blind date. And my father, Donald, and my mother, Donna McWilliams, met and fell in love, and they got married, like, I bet it was in 6 months. And I think they got engaged within 3 months.
Nice. Can you broaden this out for us? Southgate and Redondo Beach are near what major city?
Well, we're in Los Angeles County, the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California.
Okay. So is this kind of eastern L.A. or southern or northern?
So my mother was west. She lived close to the ocean, you know, maybe a five-minute drive from
okay.
the ocean. And in fact, it's where Interstate 5 is, as I recall.
Okay.
And my dad is, Southgate is south of L.A., Harbor Freeway was close by. So anyway, my grandfather was a journeyman pipe fitter, and he built refineries.
Ah.
And he built the Hanford plant on the Columbia River. And my grandmother, these are maternal grandparents, she worked for Hughes Aircraft making helicopters. And on my father's side, my grandfather, Henry, he was a machinist. And so anyway, they were talking people who moved to Los Angeles for jobs during the Depression.
Okay.
You know, my mother and father were not born in L.A., but they grew up in L.A. in the 30s and the 40s. My father did enlist in Navy right about the time World War II was ending, so he served for 3 years. He never actually saw any action. But he was a World War II vet.
What did he do in the Navy?
He was a fireman on a destroyer. He
okay.
Mostly worked in the Mediterranean and the East Atlantic.
Do you remember the name of the boat?
No, but I have records. I could actually give you that.
Okay.
In a minute or two, or maybe afterwards.
Yeah. No, I just, if you knew that. And then did your dad meet your mom? That's Don met Donna. Was that after his service then?
Yes, it was. He had two very close friends, John Patti and Stuart Small. And that's why my name is John Stuart Weisheit.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, and John Patti rose through the ranks in the Air Force. He was actually a colonel. He was a fighter pilot in Vietnam. And Stuart Small was a salesman. He lived right next to Disneyland in Anaheim. And my mom and dad told me on opening day at Disneyland, I was there. I was 1 year old.
Wow. That was 1955-ish?
Yes, I was born in 54 on July 3rd.
Okay. And how do you spell John Patti?
P-A-T-T-I-E.
Thank you. Well, that's kind of neat that your mom and dad agreed to name you after your father's two friends.
Yes.
Did you have older brothers or younger brothers or older sisters, younger sisters?
I have a younger brother, 2 years he was later. He was born in 56. His name is Joel Wayne Weisheit. And in 1960, I got my youngest sister. Her name is Lauren Janice Weisheit. That's just the three of us.
Okay. So you were the oldest then?
I was.
All right. And did you grow up there in Los Angeles?
I did. We lived in Whittier, California, on the west side, very close to Pico Rivera, and on Telegraph Road and Painter in that area, near Santa Fe Springs. There's oil wells out there.
Okay. What was your dad doing when you were growing up?
He worked in a hardware store. You know, they used to have roller skates going up and down the aisles looking for parts. But he got a job at General Electric in the mail room.
Hmm.
And he would work for General Electric for the rest of his life.
When did he start working for GE?
That's a good question. Probably before I was born.
Okay.
1953.
Okay.
And he retired like in 1989 or 90.
And did he work his way up through GE?
He did.
Okay.
He was in utility sales, so his customers were the power utilities like Pacific Gas and Electric in California. He received a transfer to work in Phoenix. General Electric opened up a new office there, and that was 1966. And, you know, that was when APS was developing their nuclear power plant program.
Okay.
You know, so Salt River Project was another customer. Whenever we went on vacation, I would have, and if there was a hydroelectric facility or a coal plant on the way, my dad would call up his friends and we would do tours in all the dams and all the power plants. So, like, you know, this is like Navajo Generating Station when it was brand spanking new.
So this would have been in the early 60s then?
Late 60s.
Okay.
70s too.
Okay, and where, so you grew up in the city?
I did.
And did you, you know, did you like go camping on weekends? Did your parents like to do that, or was that only for vacation, summer vacation kind of things?
Oh, no, they were weekend warriors. Absolutely.
How do you mean?
Pardon?
Tell me more.
Oh, well, if Dad had a week or two of vacation, we usually went to the Sierras.
Okay.
But on weekends, we would, as soon as we got out of school and Mom and Dad got off work, the whole family, we would go to the Colorado River. And we would spend the weekend there and then Zoom back on Sunday night. And, you know, that was before Interstate 10 was built, so it was all on highways. And
so this would be Route 66?
No. Oh, my. What's that highway?
Out through Bakersfield?
No. So we would go through Indio.
Okay.
And Desert Center. We would actually, we went to Parker area. We went to Lake Havasu at first. On the Chimoave Indian Reservation, there's a place called Havasu Landing.
Okay.
Across the reservoir is what is now called Havasu City.
Lake Havasu City.
Lake Havasu City?
Mm-hmm.
At the time, that place was called Site 6. It was a rehabilitation for people, for vets who had either malaria or tuberculosis. It was a very common sight to see military planes landing there for, for soldiers that needed rest and recuperation and dry, mm-hmm. hot air.
Okay. And so you were 5, 6, 7, 8 when this was happening?
Yes, 5. My parents decided I needed to learn how to water ski when I was 5 years old.
So I'm assuming you grew up as a good swimmer.
Oh, yeah. Yes, one of our neighbors was in charge of all the swimming pools in Los Angeles. I was a towhead. Green hair. freckles, sunburned all the time. Yeah, that was me.
Did you get into surfing at all?
No, I didn't. We would occasionally go to the beach. But my parents, when they were growing up, it was the beach.
Okay.
But when we were growing up, it was the Colorado River.
Why do you think that was?
I don't think my mom and dad wanted the crowds.
Ah.
And, if you go to the Colorado River today, you have crowds. But
right.
Back then, it was a quiet place.
Hmm. Did you guys own a boat?
We didn't at first. We had friends who had boats, and usually we would get up in the morning and go fishing for catfish, and then in the afternoon we'd go water skiing. And and I learned how to, I caught more green sunfish than I would ever care to eat. If we caught it, we had to eat it.
So did you like water skiing? Was that something you...
Oh, yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chuck Stern was my idol. In Woodshop, I made a ski, a slalom ski.
Really?
Yeah, I was way into it. I was really good at it, too. But, it didn't capture...
I was going to say, it would be hard to, in high school, join the skiing class, because there probably wasn't one.
No, there wasn't.
But still, most weekends, as you were in grade school, junior high school, y'all were still tramming out to the Colorado.
Yeah. We got invited all the time because we got up on the first pull. You didn't have to train us. We already trained.
Okay. you and your brother and sister?
Yeah. So, teaching somebody how to ski is kind of painful. It's very time consuming. It's boring, actually. 15, 16 tries, but, people liked us because we got up and we stayed up, and we were, it was, my mom skied, my dad skied, we all skied.
Nice. Did you do a tandem skiing where there's two people being towed behind the boat?
Yep. Yeah,
okay.
We used to cross, you didn't have to have a shorter rope. We would go under the ropes.
Wow. Okay.
And wouldn't try to jump them. We thought that was kind of dangerous.
But were you jumping wakes of other boats and that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We were hot. We were good at it.
Did you do any of that competitively at all?
No. Well, just with friends.
Okay. And what kind of boat did you guys have eventually?
Well, eventually my dad bought one. It was a very small boat, maybe 16 feet long, powered by a 25 or 30 horsepower motor. It was a Sea King, as I recall. It was one time we flipped it. We let one of the neighbors drive it, and he didn't, this big wake, he didn't approach it correctly, and it flipped us over. That was my first boat flip.
How old were you? What year was that?
Oh, let's see. I bet I was 10.
Okay. I'm assuming nobody was wearing life jackets?
We weren't wearing life jackets.
But everybody knew how to swim, so...
Yeah, the skier was wearing a life jacket.
Okay.
So that was, you know, you had to have safety equipment. You know, they had to have a life jacket. You had to, if they fell, you had to lift up an orange flag.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. There, but, you know, we didn't, the boaters didn't have to wear life jackets in those days. They had to be in the boat, but we didn't have to wear them.
So small children, I think now they, small children have to wear a jacket, but at that time the small children didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, some did, but
okay.
I don't remember wearing them, except when I was skiing.
So typically when a boat like that turns over, all kinds of things go unexpectedly down to the bottom of the river there.
Well, that was actually Lake Havasu.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's enough air in the bow compartment to keep it floating.
Ah, okay, and that was handy.
Yeah, we just towed it to shore. Bailed it out. It could have sank. It was a fiberglass boat.
Okay. So was that, like, exciting for you as a kid? Did you, like, hey, let's try that again? Or was it, like, no, I never want to see that happen again?
Well, no, I like, my reaction was, things happen.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, I didn't, no, I went skiing an hour later.
You know, it didn't
bother me a bit.
Nice. So in the... At this time when your dad was working for GE, was your mom a homemaker or was she working as well?
Yeah, she was a homemaker until I think I was 5.
Okay.
And then she was a work mom, and she hired babysitters in the neighborhood. And then we were in school. And so when we got out of school, I would hang out at the babysitter's for 3 or 4 hours till mom got home.
And what did she do?
Oh, she worked. She was a Girl Friday, you know, kind of a secretarial pool head. She worked for companies like Clorox in California. In Arizona, she eventually worked for Valley Gin. They are the folks that gin cotton and then bale it and then stick it in warehouses and wait for the price to go up.
Okay.
And actually, I would work summers for the cotton farmers. Leighton Wolf was who I worked for. I worked for him for maybe 2 summers, and then I graduated from high school and actually hung out on the farm with him for about 6 or 7 months afterwards. I did tractors. I spent the morning irrigating. And then I would get on a tractor and go up and down fields doing cultivation, listing, plowing, disking. I don't know. Never did plow. That was for the big guys. You can break expensive equipment if you don't know what you're doing. You know, so I'm like 17.
So before we get there, in high school, were you in sports at all?
No, I didn't like the sports scene.
Okay.
I was on the swim team.
Ah.
I was on the tennis team. You know, I was on the golf team for a little while, but, you know, the bludgeoning of football just didn't.
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
Okay. And were you thinking about college? In high school, was it expected by your parents that you were going to go to college? But coming from a family of tradesmen, Was that an expectation?
Yes, it was for me. It wasn't pushed on us. Our parents wanted us, they were good about letting us live our own life and making our own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I did decide I wanted to be a medical doctor.
Okay.
But I also said I didn't want to live in the United States. I wanted to go someplace else, like Australia, or, you know, I didn't. Which I, you know, back then, I didn't really know why. I just, but now I do. I really don't like the United States.
Okay. Let's back up for a minute here. You mentioned that at one point the family moved to Phoenix. Is that right?
Yes.
When did you do that?
1966. So I'm like, I finished sixth grade and we moved in the summer and I started seventh grade in Phoenix.
So that's a kind of hot, dry landscape, like super dry compared to L.A. with a lot of moisture from the ocean there. Was that an adventuresome move or you know, what was that like?
Well, I wasn't happy about it. None of us, we lived in a baby boomer neighborhood. There were so many kids. It was off the charts. I mean, we were never lacking in friendship or companionship. You know, there was something always going on. So we really liked L.A.
Uh-huh.
And outdoor playtime was a big deal, you know. Mm. That's the first thing I noticed when I went to Phoenix. You asked a good question. Is kids don't play in Phoenix.
Huh. What do they do?
I don't know. They're holed up. I mean, maybe in the wintertime, you know.
Yep.
When the sun set, we'd go out and play basketball or tennis, but, or, you know, back, I got to go back to the pool. You know, I did end up working for Phoenix Parks and Recreation as a lifeguard for some summers.
Okay.
Yeah, so that started my first aid swimmers rescue courses, which I've been taking my entire life, starting at 16.
Is that what sort of tipped you toward thinking about being a doctor?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think so.
And because you weren't from a family of doctors, and there can be a lot of pressure if your dad's a doctor to become a doctor.
Yeah, and I liked biology.
Okay. So were you good in biology and math in high school?
No, I wasn't good in math.
Okay.
Actually, what I excelled in was history and geography.
Ah. And what was it about Australia that sort of caught your eye?
Well, National Geographic. So National Geographic was a profound influence on my life. My mother gave me a subscription for my birthday present. And this is like 1965, 1966. And I could hardly wait for it to come, and I read it from cover to cover, and it really influenced me.
How so?
Well, I started developing opinions. One, you know, that was when the population bomb discussion was happening. You know, Lyndon Johnson was on TV. That there was a timer, or no, a digital timer, because the United States was about to have 200 million people in it. And that's when Robert Ehrlich, the guy from Stanford who wrote the population bomb.
Okay.
I didn't read that, but the National Geographic covered it, and I actually made as a result of that, I made a decision I would never have children, and that was, I'm like 10, 11 years old, and I don't, here I am, I'm 65, and I don't have children.
What else did, besides making you aware of population and population concerns, which are now, there's another 130 million people just in America alone.
Yeah.
What else did that do to you and for you?
Well, I think that is where the Grand Canyon experience came into my life, because in 1966, we were on a family vacation. We were headed to Durango. We were going to do the train ride. Grand Canyon was on the way, so my father and I, well, the whole family, started walking down the Bright Angel Trail.
So I'm going to jump in here and say, was that the first time the family had gone to the Grand Canyon?
Yes.
Okay. And this was, did you guys have a station wagon? I mean, there's five of you. How did you?
We did have a station wagon. Okay. It was a Chevrolet Impala.
Okay.
Or a Power Glide. Remember those?
No, but I get the drift. Okay. And so you're going to be 12 years old then, in 66?
Yeah, I'm 12. Living okay. In Phoenix. First vacation in Arizona, I think.
All right. Well, what do you remember about that?
Well, a lot, because I hiked all the way to the bottom to Gargamel.
Wow.
And I had lunch there with my brother and my dad. My mother and sister stayed at Indian Gardens.
Okay.
I'll never forget that day. There was a German tourist there with us. We were on a sandy beach.
So this would have been at the mouth of Pipe Creek?
No, it's Garden Creek.
Okay.
And every time I pass Garden Creek,
okay,
I think of that day.
Hmm.
And I think about the sand that I had lunch on that I've never seen since. And I, you know, this is before I was a whitewater boater. I was a hiker. I had a backpack. I would go as often as I could, and I would go to different places. And if I didn't have anybody to go with, I went by myself.
This was when you were in high school?
Just out of high school.
Okay. All right, before we get there, let's go back to Grand Canyon. So the smarter ones of you, that being your mom and your sister, decided to stay at Indian Gardens, is that right?
Yeah.
And then you and your dad and your brother went down to the river.
Yes.
And this was what time of year?
It was hot.
So this was like summer vacation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm in shorts and a long sleeve shirt, though, and a hat.
Okay.
A lot of water. And we hiked out that day. I was sore for a week. But I loved it. I thought I'll never forget that day.
Nice. And then from there, did you do any more exploring at the rim, or was it from there to Durango?
Well, we went to Grand Junction. My dad was thinking that he would like to maybe live there, you know, which is interesting because now I live in Moab, which is an hour and a half away.
Mm.
This was before the Department of Energy, so the Bureau of Reclamation was in charge of electricity from hydro dams, and there was a big office in Montrose. We went there, and I went into the room with zillions of gauges and knobs and people with headphones, and it was pretty impressive. You know, it was when the Aspinall unit was just brand new. And
so you mentioned as well that because your dad worked for General Electric, you had a chance take a lot of tours of different hydroelectric facilities and electrical generating facilities. What are some of your earliest recollections of those places?
Well, you know, I was impressed. And, you know, my dad is obviously proud, and I'm proud of my dad.
Yeah.
And, I'm not supposed to be a wilderness river guide. I didn't understand wilderness, really. I mean, I didn't understand what reservoirs do to rivers and ecosystems at the time. I thought it was kind of cool, you know, but there was a time when that changed. And nobody taught me this change. I figured it out for myself, just like I did for the population problem. And, you know, I kind of like, there was a time when I went, oh, this stuff is not good.
You know, let's explore that a little bit, because you clearly liked hiking, you liked out of doors, you liked to swim, and the National Geographic is global exposure to all kinds of stuff on a global scale, Himalayas to jungles, cultural differences. I'm just trying to tease out a little bit more about how you slowly started doing more backpacking. How did that happen?
I had friends who, it's like, hey, let's go backpacking. It was a big thing, you know. It was new. The equipment certainly was terrible back then. I had friends who had mutual interest in that, and you know, we would go backpacking. It was the Grand Canyon. That's when Yosemite. I did a lot of it. It was a lot of work.
Did you get into climbing?
Later on, I did. I think, you know, I kind of came to a decision, like, what am I going to invest my money in? Because I don't, you know, I didn't have a lot. I never did finish college.
Okay.
So I don't have a degree. And I do like to work outdoors. So, you know, what I'm saying is yeah, river guiding is, I mean, I didn't know it then, but, you know, when the connection happened, I took it.
So let's kind of tie this together. In Phoenix, there was a outdoor gear store. I'm blanking on the name right now.
Oh, on K Creek Road?
Do you remember the name?
Yeah, the Hiking Shack.
Yeah, that's it. And that's where a lot of hikers and climbers would congregate, and a lot of outdoor gear changed hands. Is that where you bought your first backpack?
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Is that where you kind of got some ideas of places to hike, or who were you hiking with at the time?
Oh, well, mostly my friend Kevin Hammontry, who we went to school together. We lived in the same neighborhood.
How do you spell Kevin's last name?
Hammontry, Hammontree.
Thank you. And he was the same age with you? Was he in high school together?
Yep.
Okay.
Best buddies.
All right. And where did you go with Kevin?
Well, Pine Mountain, in the Verde River area, the Mazatzals, Cave Creek. We went up Cave Creek a lot. Later on, I would go by myself. I bought a beater Toyota for like $100, and I just, it was a great Toyota, and I took it everywhere. I went bird watching in southeast Tucson. I went to the Babakiveries. I went to Chiricahuas, Santa Rita's, the Galeros, the Whetstones. I started actually. I didn't go to. I did more stuff there than I did any other place. It was southeastern Arizona.
So, At this time, if your dad still had a boat, he certainly wasn't boating with you.
Yeah, I left. I got disinterested. I just
Okay.
wasn't. I would periodically use it.
Okay. The places you've stated, these are like all over the state, north, south, east, west, out of Phoenix. But after high school, you started into college. Was that at ASU then in Phoenix?
No, Glendale Community College.
Okay.
I was in my first semester. I was in my second week. I was in the middle of math class, and I swear to God, I just walked out, and I just, this is not what I want to do.
Okay. Then what did you do?
I went to work on the farm with Leighton Wolf.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where was that farm?
West Phoenix. I mean, it's condos. Now, it's interesting. 4 years ago, I went to the orange groves that I planted, and
Okay.
I actually watched them being ripped out by a backhoe
Wow.
to make room for condos.
Interesting.
So that's the point, is, I, in my lifetime, I have seen dramatic changes, and all these changes have profoundly affected me.
Well, let's take them slowly and steadily, bit by bit, as the years are rolling along. So college lasted all of 2 weeks. And then it
And I'm
was
proud of that.
all right then. And then it was off to work. How did you meet the Mr. Wolf?
Well, he liked to hire young boys from that were the secretaries at Valley Gin, and like. I only got $1.60 an hour, Tom.
Okay.
I'm 16 years old. I graduated from a newspaper boy to a farm boy. And I would meet him at 43rd Avenue and Dunlap at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we would drive out together. And I learned a lot from him. He was a major in the army, served in World War II. I learned a lot about agriculture.
Okay. Did you get interested in agriculture, or were you interested in machinery and how things worked, or?
I loved it because every day was different. I started the morning setting pipe with a shovel,
Okay.
and then he would drive me to, I would do weed control. When it came time to do harvesting, I would rebuild the cotton harvesters with a zillion pieces, lots of moving parts, bearings, stuff, and I rebuilt them. So I learned about things like, I to this day I can take care of my own car problems.
Which is a good skill to have. So laying pipe, I'm assuming this is like, okay, here's an irrigation ditch, and we need to get were you setting suction pipes
Yes.
down into row after row after row, pipe after
Yep.
pipe after pipe.
Yep. Gravity flow siphon. Yeah, and
Yep.
that siphon water through a black tube that's 2 inches in diameter.
Were you ever wondering at the time where that water came from?
Yes, I knew where it came from. There. So, Phoenix farmers were pumping groundwater.
Okay.
And that bothered me. Because I can, how do you stay cool in Phoenix in the summertime? We'd go to the well. And I mean, it's pristine groundwater. It tastes delicious. And it just that those pumps never stopped. That was part of the routine. I had to make sure they were the oil or the pump was flowing. And there was maintenance that needed to be done, and
These are large pumps. They're 2 feet, 3 feet in diameter. They stand 5 or 6 feet high. electric motors on, I believe the pump is there on the surface, and there's a draw pipe that goes down to the water. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
With a submersible pump at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, they're pumping enough to irrigate 40 acres.
Okay.
And then the next day you do another 40 acres, and the next day you do another 40 acres.
How many acres did Major Wolf have?
A lot.
Okay.
A square mile. No, half a square mile.
Okay. That's a lot of land.
Yeah.
And so how, so you're thinking about, all right, I want to be a doctor, and all that gave up. Did that, when you walked out of Glendale, did you walk out of the idea of wanting to be a doctor?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to be outside. That was definite. Whatever it takes to be outside. Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned a trip to Lake Powell with your family. So you were 12 at Grand Canyon. When did you all first go into Durango from the Grand Canyon? Did you stop at Lake Powell then on the way?
Well, so the deal was you would get four or five families to pitch in and rent a houseboat for a week.
Ah.
And a lot of the families had ski boats, so we would tow them behind the houseboat. We were usually out for a week.
And you guys had a boat, so would your boat be one of those boats being towed?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the kids would go water skiing, and the adults would usually play bridge.
Okay.
And so I drove a lot of skiers.
Year was that? What was your first year out there on a houseboat on Powell?
I think it was 1973.
Okay.
And the reservoir was 100 feet below the top of the spillways at Glen Canyon Dam.
So is that 100 feet below full pool, or how was that?
Actually, wait a minute. It was 1972. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And then we went back in 73, and the reservoir rose significantly that year. Of course, we could check the gauge records to see if I'm right about the year, but nevertheless, the rise was so significant that I would see green-leafed cottonwoods completely underwater.
So these were cottonwoods that were on the shore or near shore in 72.
They were up side canyons. I think I went up Gunsight.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in 73, you were boating over those same trees.
Yeah, looking for Indian ruins that
okay.
I had seen the year before that I couldn't find. And then I, of course, realized the reservoir had buried them. And that's when the light went on, Tom. That's when I went, oh, I get it. This is bad.
So you were 18 years old?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have any other support from that? Were you doing any reading or anything else that was helping you realize that something wasn't right here?
Yeah. So 75 is when the Monkey Wrench Gang came out. So now I'm introduced to Ed Abbey.
But this is 72, 73, so you're ahead of that curve. Was there anything else more formative, I mean, anything out of the Sierra Club, David Brower, or anything else that you might have run across to help you think about this stuff?
Not the Sierra Club or David Brower.
Your dad was, I mean, because he clearly liked the outdoors, and he... you know, would have been seeing a huge amount of change, you know, just in L.A. during your growing up years and the 20, 18 years you grew up, you know, his time as a kid growing up in the L.A. area, he would have seen that change as well.
Yeah. The changes I made that day, my father never made.
Okay.
And I did not know about the Sierra Club. I wasn't raised to know about the Sierra Club.
Ah.
But I did have a library card. And the person who turned me on to Colorado River problems was Wallace Stegner.
How so?
I read Beyond the 100th Meridian.
Okay.
And to this day, I think that's the most profound book I've ever read in my life. And, of course, I devoured Moore Stegner. He became my idol.
Okay.
And then I learned about David Brower when John McPhee's book came out. So, yeah, you know, I'm going to bookstores and I'm buying this stuff. And, you know, there was a lot of it coming out in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Philip Fradkin, Donald Worster, which is my next hero, Cadillac Desert by Mark Reisner.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, and then I got turned on to Vaughn Short, Raging River, Lonely Trail.
Okay, let's back up a bit, sort of forge ahead, and then we need to back up and tie things along, because you're working for a Major Wolf on a half square mile farm, and you're probably 18, though you've been up to Lake Powell. What happened then?
Let's see. I started, I actually started hanging around Lake Mead, believe it or not, and I didn't put in at Las Vegas Bay, I went to Temple Bar. I had my parents' boat, and I went as far up the reservoir as I could. And
what year was this?
77, 78.
Okay, so I think the road into South Cove had just been built by then. You know, if you were coming in from Phoenix, you would come up to Kingman and then go up to Temple Bar, versus going into Meadview and on to South Cove.
That's what I did. I went to Kingman, Temple Bar, put the boat in, and drove up. Gosh, I didn't know where I was, but I went. The reservoir was pretty much full, so it must have been the late 70s.
Okay. And it would be easy to get lost up there, God's Pocket and the Virgin Arm you know, just Pierce Bay alone is big enough to...
No, I had maps.
Okay.
Yeah. I have that map to this day. It's the Park Service map. It's a nice map.
Okay.
Anyway, I went above 12, whatever the lake level was. I was on flowing current, and I spent the night.
This would have been up to separation, or
beyond separation.
Okay.
Maybe between Nice and separation somewhere.
Okay.
And I spent the night, and I woke up to my boat entirely out of water. I did not know about hydropower releases.
Hmm.
So here I am in my ski boat.
So let's back up for a minute. The Colorado River through Grand Canyon enters into Lake Mead, but that water in the river was coming out of Glen Canyon Dam, and in the second half of the 1970s, that swing of water would have been from 30 to 5 every day. So it would be 30,000 or so, 33,000 cubic feet a second, and then at night it would drop down to 5 or 6. Is that right?
Yep, that's exactly what happened.
And so we'd be unaware of that. You would be,
yeah.
You'd come in on high water and you'd set up camp and you'd go to sleep, and then the water would drop like a rock overnight.
Yes.
Depending on the distance you are, of course, downstream from the dam.
Yes.
And so you're in a fiberglass, I'm assuming this boat is 18, 20 feet long, something like
Yeah,
that?
it's an inboard outboard with a four-cylinder motor.
So it's not the sort of thing you can kind of pick up and put back in the water.
Well, I did get it back in the water.
How did you do that?
Well, it was tilted, of course, and I was on, there was some sand.
Okay.
And so I just, you know, it took a long time, but I got it unstuck.
Nice.
But while I'm doing that, there's a private river trip coming down the river, and they're laughing and they're having fun, and that was another one of those profound effects. That's when I went, I want to do that.
Did you go talk to them?
No, they floated by. I'll never forget that. I said to myself, I am going to do that. That's when I discovered more books, more Harry Alson and Georgie White. I started reading their stuff. You know, I found out that Harry Alson had a hermitage at Quartermaster. I would hike all around looking for it.
Did you ever find it?
No.
Okay.
Have you ever found it?
I've never looked in there. I kind of know the area. I know where it is, but it's Hualapai area right now, and pretty heavily vegetated, and it's hard to get in there. Where the waterfall is, where the spring is, for Quartermaster Canyon, it's right up there at the high water line.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a photograph of it, and so with a photo you could go figure it out, but that was long ago.
Yes, it was.
So this is 1977, 1978, when you're there. What were you doing job-wise at the time?
I was in construction.
Okay.
In Phoenix, which was great because I could set my own schedule. I would get 3 months a year with not in a row, you know, spread over the year. I'd get a week or two here and I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I would go back. I'd go back up Lake Mead, you know, and
were you building houses? What were you doing construction-wise?
Yeah, I was building houses. I watched the Central Arizona project being built.
Okay.
And starting with the pumping station right there at Lake Havasu, we had property. We had a family, 3-bedroom, 1-bath house below Parker Dam on the Arizona side. The family bought it in 64.
Okay.
And for $1,000.
Wow.
My parents would end up selling it for
$300,000. Holy cow.
so I'm still kind of a reservoir boy until 1980, because that's when I did my first whitewater trip.
Okay. You know that let's use that first river trip as the start of our next interview, because we're closing in on our first hour here of Yik Yakking.
You mean we're going to do this in sets of whatever it takes?
Yeah, let's do it in six sets of whatever it takes.
Oh my God, but I have a 40-year career.
Well, look, we've just covered 18 years, okay? And you're only 65, right? So in 4 interviews, we ought to be able to get it all figured out if we do an interview every 20 years, all right?
We're just talking about the years when I have pimples.
Exactly. How did you get into construction from working on the farm?
So, President Carter, he had a major HUD program where the government was taking VA and HUD homes that were foreclosed, and there was federal funding to get those homes back in shape, and they hired a lot of contractors to do that work. So I was in remodeling, which was cool because I did roofing, I did drywall, I did painting, I did cleaning, I did rake, shovel, and wheelbarrow, I did trash, I did, I got to do it all.
Plumbing, electrical, rough framing.
Well, that had to be done by a licensed contractor, but I would put on the cover plates and,
okay,
stuff, doorknobs.
Yep.
I was a gopher.
Okay.
For contractors, and yeah.
All right. And that would have paid a little more than a dollar something an hour, $1.60
yeah,
an hour.
I kind of bid on it. I got I'll do it for this much a day. And I actually got a generator and a floor machine, and I would sand the concrete, get the paint and stucco off sidewalks and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I was a generalist. I worked with some of the best contractors. I worked with guys that didn't even use a chalk line. They were that good.
Wow.
They could lay out a frame in the time it takes me to drink a cup of coffee.
Wow.
I was just blown away.
Fast. And working with crews of, 10 to 15 people or less?
Usually just me and a contractor.
Okay, so small crews. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so were you thinking, gee, maybe I ought to get into this construction deal?
Yeah, I did. And, but at the same time, I'm driving a lot. And I was making enough money to buy houses.
Okay.
And as Phoenix spread out, I would move closer to the work, but I'm still driving 100 miles a day. And I know the Central Arizona Project's coming in, and I'm going, I need to leave.
Okay. So Phoenix was getting too big.
Yeah. And I was falling in love with rivers. And so, I ended up in Moab. I could have had a Grand Canyon career, but I decided not to do that. And I'm glad I made that choice.
Maybe this is a good location to wrap up part one, working construction in Phoenix, because there's going to be a story about how you got out of that and the choice that you made to go to Grand Canyon or Moab.
Yep.
Does that sound like a plan?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, in that case, this will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with John Weisheit, November 19th, 2019. My name is Tom Martin, and John, thank you so very, very much.
You're welcome.